Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Maat Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very appreciative and thankful that you took the time to tune in with us, to be with us tonight. And as usual, before we begin tonight's program, we always give thanks praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always just, you know, very responsible, shall I say, when it comes to the work, the dreams, the legacy of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Our mission, or one of our missions here at New Day, is to make certain that we continue the work that really went towards helping us to be free. It is our mission, it is our commitment to, you know, do what we can to help make certain that that work continues and that we make some headway in doing so. And so, as we now go into this seventh year, we want to make certain that you understand why we are here, why we've been able to continue, and that we certainly plan to do so, and that very soon we're going to be bringing you some new and some very interesting kinds of programs that we feel is going to be even more productive than what they've been in these previous years. With that said, we are going to get ready to go to our newer segment that we've been doing for the past few months now with Sister Coker, who has been giving us insight and information into history, our story, from different aspects, from those who have made contributions in the arts and in the entertainment field, but also those who have been activists, who have been very instrumental in helping to do things to help our people. You know, it's so important that we make certain we bring that information to you, because if we don't, who will? I mean, there's always, a lot of emphasis placed on the more popular people, and of course, you know, we do that too, but also we make certain that we familiarize you with people who you may not be as familiar with, because we oftentimes know that sometimes the system makes certain that you don't know about some of them. So we try to, you know, find out different things about people all over the country so that we can share that information with you. Now, one of the projects that we're going to be launching really full force here in Philadelphia, in the state of Pennsylvania, and we plan to really push that forward into other areas throughout the country, and that is the Million Women Movement's Historical Preservation Society. What we're finding is that as we're doing work with this gentrification, we're starting to see how much of our history, based on the things that have happened in our communities, a lot of that's being lost. Or if not lost, it's being redesigned or restructured or retold or not told. And, you know, it's very interesting. Now, as you go through different cities, different urban cities, many of them have some very, very, I mean, tremendous kinds of historical significance. Well, with the way gentrification is going on, you are not going to be able to find that information as readily. We're here in Philadelphia. What we're finding that in North Philadelphia, and particularly in South Philadelphia, there was so much going on during the 1800s, and even before then, that our people, the work, the struggles, the contributions right here, you won't find that information very easily. And so the same thing is happening now in Detroit, which reminds me, we're going to talk a little more about Detroit tonight because, again, we're starting to connect the dots as to what are we going to see in the near future in terms of how these cities are being designed all over the country. Newark, Trenton, Philadelphia, Detroit, parts of New York. These cities are definitely getting ready to undergo some very serious things. And we're going to talk about that somewhat tonight. We're going to connect the dots, as I said, about gentrification and how that's connected to so-called education, but how it's also connected to the increase in crime. That's a very significant thing. Those two areas in particular, the increase of crime and so-called education, really what we're referring to more so is the dismantlement of so-called education. All these things are connected. Now, we're going to give you some examples tonight. Now, here in Philadelphia, they are now saying they're going to close 28 more schools. Last year, I think they closed 26 or 28 schools. This year, they're saying they're preparing to close 28 more schools. So what does that really mean? In Chicago, they've already closed 50. I was talking to a brother earlier today in New Jersey, and he's saying that they're talking about closing 20 or so there in that particular city. So what is really going on? Well, we've talked about it before. We're going to talk about it some more because now the picture is becoming even clearer. We're going to give you some insight into what's really going on. And again, before we do, we are going to have our history moment. And with that, we're going to bring in Sister Coca in a few moments. We want to remind you also that tonight's topic is going to focus on police, so-called police brutality, and of course what we call police terrorism. So we're going to talk about that, and now the increase with the reports of black women. Now, many of you may have heard about a recent story where a professor was not only accosted, but, really disrespected by a police officer. We're going to talk about that. But soon after that, we got reports on two other incidents, so two other situations. One with both white cops, by the way. One blatantly even called the sister a nigger after he spit in her face. Okay, these are the reports that we are now getting. So what we have to begin to realize, family, is, and we've said this before as well, when a people no longer have a respect for their women and girls, the rest is getting ready to be real clear to you. Because if we don't respect our own people, you can rest assured other people won't, and they're making sure that we now know that. So we're going to talk more about that. We're going to review some of the reports that are coming in. And lastly, one of the last reports, again, coming out of Detroit. Last week, we got the story on the sister who was found shot, of course, murdered, and the two children were missing. We have not gotten any reports that indicated the children had been found. As a matter of fact, we got another report from Detroit where a two-year-old little girl was murdered, and I mean just straight-up shot. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight as well. Point being, again, to now be very clear that there is an all-out war on black people. We used to talk a lot about, and we still do, talk a lot about the dangers for our men and our boys. Well, those dangers, of course, still exist every single day. But what we were not talking about and what is now becoming very obvious is the outright assault on black women and girls. And I'm talking about from a systematic standpoint as well as from a community standpoint. Now, I know some of you don't want to hear that and don't like it, and that's okay. But we're going to talk about it anyway, because if we don't, then we would be remiss. I'm not going to be. If someone else doesn't want to deal with that, that's fine. That's your business. But that's not what we're not going to try to skirt this issue here. We're going to make sure that we continue to discuss it, to report it, to try to see, and not just try, but to find ways in dealing with it. We're not trying to cover it up or run away from it. Our intention is not to try to, create extra drama or whatever in regards to it, but we definitely have to begin to address it. We're going to also tell you about one of our projects. We've heard more recently about Obama and his theme called, Brothers Keepers. Cool. I care less, meaning I'm not, as concerned about, he didn't create anything for females. I care less. I'm more concerned about what we're going to do as women. What is our plan? What is our program? I don't care about what Obama do or don't do. But anyway, I don't want to go off on that. Nevertheless, let's go to our live line and let's bring in Sister Coker, and we're going to talk more about what's going on with, the murders in Detroit, with the so-called education system, but also we're going to talk about more about black music, too. Now, of course, last week we said that was going to kind of close it out, but I don't know how many of you saw the so-called BET Awards. Now, I don't normally look at it. It just so happened I was somehow moved to look at it this year, and I did. And I'm saying, folks, if we don't step this thing up, let me tell you, what people are calling black music or what they will be calling black music in the future, well, guess what? It's going to be a real problem, all right? What they call black music or what looks like they're going to be trying to call black music is not going to be something that we would want to be calling black music. So we need to talk more about that. We're going to talk more about that. And joining us with that dialogue tonight, I'm so happy to have this brother to join us tonight for this dialogue. And this is going to be the first of several conversations, but I'm sure those of you who are familiar with Brother Africa Bambaataa and the Zulu Nation, then you know of the significance of that movement of when hip-hop was really, saying something, being about something, representing something. Well, of course, when you hear Africa Bambaataa, you know that that's where he was coming from and is still coming from. And, of course, with the Zulu Nation, they still representing. Well, joining us a little later on, we're going to bring on Brother Dr. Strange, okay? And he's going to tell you how he got that name. But we're going to also talk about a letter that was recently sent to one of the so-called personalities at a radio station that Brother Africa Bambaataa sent. And this should be the first of many, because we got a lot of people that come on these radio waves and write these news calls and so forth. I mean, they are fronting straight up, and not just fronting, but are just creating such misdirection. Now, going back for a moment to the BET Awards, look, I mean, if you saw it, I mean, surely you had to go, what? And I think I'm pretty I'm pretty kind of like in the flow of today, I know a lot of folks in my age bracket are just totally against some things. I look at it carefully because I am formerly a artist, both performing, both in writing. Yes, I've written music, I've choreographed stuff. So, I'm real familiar with the genre, the so-called artistic realm. And therefore, I know how to separate one thing from the other. But this bullcrap they got going on now, wow. And that's the standard? I mean, that's like, the main thing? No. We better be saying something and doing something for real, for real. But we're going to talk more about that a little later on. Right now, let's go to the live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker, who I'm sure has some folks that she's going to tell us about and some information she's going to share with us about some folks who have made some serious contributions. So let's do that. Let's open up this line and let's go talk to Sister Coker. Hey, Sister Coker, how you doing tonight?
Splendid. And praising our Creator that the month of July has over 50 men and women of whom we will at least learn their dates of origin. And we will feature several people each week, trying to get them all in date order. and we will report on Kwame Ture, also known as Dopey Carmichael's, at the end of the month, the last day of the month, because his is, I think, July 29th or 30th or something like that. So he'll come very late. Tonight we start with Frederick Carlton Lewis, who was born on the 1st of this month, 1961, in Birmingham, Alabama. And as we all know, he was the track and field athlete who won 9 gold Olympic medals spanning from 1984, 82, 92, and 96. And he won 4 gold in the long jump at the University of Houston in 1980. He qualified to compete in the Moscow Olympics, but President Jimmy Carter canceled U.S. participation due to a protest against the invasion of Afghanistan by the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. So Lewis was the second man after Jesse Owens in the 1936 Olympics, Berlin, Germany Olympics. He was the second person to win gold medals in the 100 and 200 meter dashes, long jump, and the 4x100 meter relay. In 1984, 48 years later, in Los Angeles, California, Lewis was inducted into the United States Olympics Hall of Fame in 1985 and retired in 1997 after 36 years. The second person is Willie Dixon, also the first, born in 1915 in Vicksburg, Mississippi. He died January 29, 1992, in Burbank, California. He was a prolific blues bass player and composer. He produced and recorded his own and recorded and produced music for his contemporaries, such as Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, and Dixon also recorded with Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, and many others, including producing the music of Buddy Guy. As a blues, Dixon founded the Blues Heaven Foundation in 1991, contributing funds to music education programs. In 1989, he published I Am the Blues, his autobiography. Willie Dixon was inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1994. And also on the 1st, Thomas Andrew Dorsey was born in 1899 in Villa Rica, Georgia. And he transitioned at the age of 94. Now, that's really something right there. In 1993, January 23rd, he was known as the father of gospel music. He was a pianist, and he arranged and composed over 1,000 songs. I was shocked. His best known is Precious Lord, Take My Hand. And just as a note, Elvis Presley received a gold record from singing one of Dorsey's songs, Peace in the Valley. Now, how you like that?
Wow.
Yeah. Now, finally, the last person that I found born on the 1st was Walter Francis White in 1893, Atlanta, Georgia. He left us March 21st, 1955, in New York, New York. As a civil rights leader, he built the foundations of the civil rights movement as an official of the NAACP, and he was an influential author of the Harlem Renaissance. Now, he was a light-hued, blue-eyed man who learned in 1906 when he lived in, What in the world? I'm trying to figure out what I wrote here. Okay. He defended his family home during an Atlanta race riot. And that's when he learned how important it was to stand up and be who he was. And from that point on, he let it be known that he was an African-American man. He served as an assistant to NAACP Executive Secretary James Weldon Johnson, who, as we all know, with his brother wrote, "Lift Every Voice and Sing." Passing. Oh, and another thing he did with his light hue and blue eyes, he passed for white so that he was able to investigate lynching and heinous crimes without a hindrance. So he was able to do this safely because he just pretended to be what he looked like. The next person is Medgar Wiley Evers, who was born the second day, 1925, in West Decatur, Mississippi. After risking his life exposing violent behavior of white supremacist wannabes to the attention of the nation, he was murdered in the back, shot in the back, in his front yard by a heinous named Byron de la Beckwith, June 12, 1963, 38 years of age when he was murdered in Jackson, Mississippi. In 1963 and 64, murder trials allowed Beckwith to remain free. But finally, 30 years later, in 1994, he was convicted. Medgar lived a life of investigating and publicizing racist terrorism and lynching. He led boycotts in reference to Jim Crow, and he established meetings. Medgar Wiley Evers was a man of action and courage. And you don't hear too much about him, but it's much more information. I just couldn't write everything in there. The next person, we have a couple more. Thurgood Marshall was born July 2nd, 1908. And he was a lawyer, as you know. He was from Baltimore, Maryland, was the first black United States Supreme Court justice and the founder of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. And his victory in Brown versus Board of Education outlawed segregation in United States public life. Marshall died January 24, 1993, and he lived to be quite elderly, 85 years. He died in Bethesda, Maryland. He attended Lincoln University in Oxford, Pennsylvania, then went to Howard University Law School. Brown versus the Board of Education. In Brown versus the Board of Education, Marshall argued the fact of racial separation harming African American children, to which the court unanimously agreed. Marshall is to be remembered as a man who did the best he could with what he had. Do we have time for two more?
Yep, sure do.
Gary II also was Edward Bullins, known as Ed Bullins, born in 1935 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Yay! He was a playwright whose plays reflect urban life realities. His plays often reveal his dislike of political rhetoric as a substitute for needed action for upliftment. In 1978, after Bullins' son died, Ed Bullins founded the Bullins Memorial Theater in California. Lines from Ed Bullins' How Do You Do are used in Coker's Five Women performance based on Nina Simone's Four Women. So thank you, Ed Bullins, for encouraging and exposing our Philadelphia brilliance. And then finally, Anna Arnold Hedgman was born the 5th, 1899, in Marshall, Tennessee, Iowa, and died January 17th, 1990, in New York. Pardon me about that. She was a public servant and civil rights advocate, reaching 91 years. And she was the only woman on the organizing committee of the 1963 March on Washington. And yes, your Coker attended. And always remember to call Children, Children, and Teach Children Safety Now, TCSN. Thank you.
All right, and thank you, my sister. Now, I just need to make one correction there. Kwame Ture actually was born June the 29th, not July.
in this encyclopedia I'm looking at, he was born July 29th.
No, he definitely was born June, because we had planned to do a tribute last week, and I don't even remember what happened, but we did not do it. But no, he was actually born June 29th.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to
there were quite a few. Yeah, you need to let them know, because there were quite a few events that happened last Saturday, and I was invited to a few of them. One was in New York, one was in D.C., and hopefully we can get either Brother Haki or Brother Lee on, because I think they may have had something in Virginia or know of someone that attended. But there were several tributes to him, you know, in different cities last Saturday. Yep.
Uh-huh.
But listen,
okay,
let me
well,
tell
here
you
it is, July 29th, born 1941. In Port of Spain,
yeah.
Trinidad.
Right. That's the date. I mean, that's the year, and that's the location. But
okay.
Definitely June 29th, and he made transition on November 15th, 1998. And I had the opportunity to meet with him in February of 1998, just a few months prior to him becoming an ancestor.
Report this to the Africana, because it definitely says July 29, 1941.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, publishers, they make mistakes too. So it's not anything new. But listen, I tell you one thing that I did find very interesting when I was, you know, preparing for the tribute that we had planned to do, and that is he attended Howard University.
Yes.
I did not know until we began to look at some of the research that there were three people who were, you know, relatively notable who were his instructors at Howard. One was Sterling Brown, the great poet Sterling Brown. Was one of his professors, but also Dr. Nathan Hare. And those who, of course, I know that, yes, I did not know that, Dr. Nathan Hare. And for those who listen to our program regularly, then you know we've talked about Dr. Nathan Hare on numerous occasions, Dr. Nathan and Julia Hare. The time that Dr. Ashanti was being looked at for the directorship at Temple University, Dr. Nathan Hare was also in running.
Oh.
So we remember Dr. Nathan Hare very well. But lastly, the other person who was one of Baba Kwame Ture's professors was Toni Morrison.
Oh, wow. It's all connected so beautifully. And the people I know who were in Howard at that time also knew him.
Yes. So we have to do a whole program on our dear brother, because there's so much information and so many things that he was a part of and contributed to. It would take an entire show and maybe two to really do justice, you know, to the work and the legacy that he really brought forward. I mean, it's incredible. It was so much that I had no idea about it until I began to, you know, try to get some insight. So we have to do a special program, Sister Coker, in the near future,
right.
You know, just to focus on the contributions. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. Okay, excellent.
All right. All right, my sister. So, again, I thank you so much for sharing that information with us, and we look forward to next week when you bring us some love.
All righty. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
So all right. Okay, family, what we're going to do is get ready to go to our live line. We're going to take another quick break, though, before we do. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of things. One is this thing with music. I mean, like we said, we know that music, like music, supposedly ended, you know, June, whatever. But, hey, you know, we play by our own rules. So we need to talk more about what's going on with music and so-called entertainment. I mean, what I saw the other night was just insanity. And it is just so, you know, accepted. It's like it was unbelievable. And I mean, it wasn't like I was so shocked or surprised, but it just helped to reinforce that we've got to start doing something a bit more aggressively and a bit more realistically. It is just not the norm. It is the norm what we're seeing, but this is not. Well, this is not black women. This is not African women. What's being paraded out here? We'll talk more about that in a minute. I'm going to take a quick break. And I want you all to get ready, and because this is going to be one of those dialogues that's going to be relatively candid, and feel free to jump in when we open up the lines, because we've got to start talking about representing. Our women have to begin to represent, and our men as well. Because, you know, what I saw, I don't really like to even talk about this to give it even, you know, that kind of credence, but if we don't discuss it so that we can start developing strategies on what we're going to do about it, then it's only going to get worse. But to see Lil Wayne and to see Nicki Minaj and all of that, and I mean, and they were raving. The audience was raving, and the public, it was crazy. But anyway, we'll talk more about that when we come back. We'll take a quick break, and we will be right back. Tuned to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and this is one of the official broadcasts for the historic Million Woman March, and now it's Universal Movement. And I said one of the official broadcasts, and that's because we're getting ready to reactivate a few of our other broadcasts that we used to do. So I'm going to be telling you more about that probably next week, because there's going to be some new addition to our lineup in terms of our media communications kinds of things. It's time to up the ante. We've got to do it. There's no question. So we are putting some things in place to make certain that we're able to provide you with more information, and, you know, things have got to be moved forward. At any rate, as we were talking earlier with Sister Coco, we talked about, well, she mentioned a few people that I certainly wasn't familiar with, and I'm going to have to go back into the archives once we finish tonight's program and review some of what she said, because I wasn't able to write it down, but there were a few people that I wasn't familiar with, and I do want to know more about you know, some of the people that she mentioned, and I'm hoping that you will take the time to do so as well. I really appreciate Sister Cooper bringing us those moments of insight in terms of our history, because, again, we need to know as much as possible about our history, our story, as it said. So, you know, again, we look forward to our segment next week when she comes back with some more. Okay. Again, one of the things we talked about, music, and as I indicated, I had the opportunity to sit with Baba Kwame Ture in February of 1998. Interestingly enough, one of the things that we talked about was music, believe it or not. I did more of the listening, because when you're sitting with someone like that, I mean, for real, you just really want to listen. I mean, there's so much information and so much just being conveyed. I mean, there was just no need for me to talk a lot. But one of the things that our elder, you know, talked to me about was the concern about music. And particularly at that time, he was talking to me about jazz, for example, how even jazz music was now being tampered with in such a way that the way it's being presented, unless you knew jazz, you wouldn't know jazz, because these stations are now pushing what they call soft jazz, and specifically what he said, he called it soft jazz, and that with that it was, you know, these other people. And so, again, if you did not take the time to review our music, you would think that the Kenny somebody and all these other people were, you know, the real trumpet player or horn players or, you know, whatever you call it. And so it was just very interesting that we had this dialogue in 98. And, of course, you know, the discussion about music in general. Well, here we are today in 2014, and what we're seeing is the masquerade is on and popping. I mean, these people, what I saw the other day, I just was like, There was a white female who is now the top rapper, female rapper. Well, with the exception of Nicki Minaj, I mean, but, I mean, golf ain't me, but I'm just saying, they were raving over this white female so-called rapper from Australia or something. Anyway, it was just unbelievable, but yet not, because a people who do not value or actually take care of their history, well, somebody else will, obviously. I know how I've had to fight to make certain that the history of the Maine Woman March stayed intact, and not just intact, but, you know, not whitewashed, because this is what people will do when you don't try to secure what you have. Our women did not step up the way we should have. Then all these other women attempted to sabotage. They failed, fortunately, but that, you know, nature is the way it is. Meaning, in this society, they will do what they can do. Anyway, hip hop, our culture, our music. Well, what's going to happen with it? Well, we better start talking about that and figuring it out, because other people got plans for it, and it is obvious that they are switching it around. And when I say switching it around, I mean that literally. But they're doing some stuff with it that in a minute we will have a generation coming in who may not know who is who. Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to get ready to go to our live line now, and we're going to talk with a veteran, a hip-hop veteran, and a member of a nation. I mean, and when I say a nation, we got to talk more about that, too, because, you know, there's more than just being an organization or a group or, you know, all these other things. We've got to now look at the other areas of development that we must have. At any rate, we're going to talk about what's going on with music today, our music. How is it affecting our community? How is it affecting our people? we were going to have this dialogue last week and during the course of June, and so much stuff was going on, we weren't able to elaborate the way we wanted to. Well, we want to do that tonight. I was able to connect with my brother, and we're going to bring him in because last week, I think one of our sisters sent me an article where Afrika Bambaataa wrote a letter to one of the so-called DJs or the radio personalities and really, you know, discussing or saying how, you know, these people are frauds. They talk about how much they know or how much they're into certain things related to our music and culture, whatever. And for real, not really. So we want to begin to see how we can further, you know, expose some of this or address some of these issues. So we're going to talk about that tonight, and we're going to talk about it in the near future as well. So with that said, we're going to go to our live line, and I'd like to introduce to you all our brother, Dr. Strange, who is also a representative of the Zulu Nation, and we're going to talk about what can we do, what should we do in regards to black music today. Let's find out. And we're going to give you all the opportunity as well to join in very shortly, and again, you know, this is a no-holds-barred kind of conversation at like we normally do. So, you know, feel free to bring it. At any rate, let's go to our live line now, and I think we have Dr. Strange with us. Brother, do we have you on this line?
Peace and greetings, Empress Kianose. How are you?
Greetings to you. How are
First
you
and foremost, I'm great. I'm honored and humbled. First and foremost, that you invited me to be a guest as well as a listener on your show. And what more can I say? The topic is self-explanatory. And as I was listening to the great educator and orator prior to me coming in, I just wanted to mention, if I could, that we also should take time out to have an honorable mention for another great African-American or black or indigenous athlete in track and field by the name of Tommy Smith, who actually got a gold medal in 68 for the 200-meter dash, but as the world knows, was stripped of that medal due to his stance against racial injustice in America by putting a black fist in the air with him, as well as John Carlos, who ran the same race, but he won the bronze medal, but it was Tommy Smith who won the gold. So I just wanted to mention that in an honorable way, that he should be, and he's in my history books anyway, as a gold medalist and record-winning gold medalist for the 68th Olympics, as well as other things that he did, even his stint in the NFL that few people know about.
Well, brother, absolutely. We thank you for that. I'm going to have to check to see when his Earth Day is, because I think that's what Sister Cook was focusing on, the July
right.
folk who were either born in that month or may transition in that month.
Right. I'm not sure of his birthday, but just, I know she mentioned regarding Jesse Owens and so forth winning gold medals, so I just wanted to honorably mention that. But to the matter at hand.
Yes, sir. But before you do, tell us a little bit about you, because I'm sure that they've heard your name, but, you know, that's not adequate enough. Tell us a little about you. We are family here.
Yes, indeed. Well, first and foremost, I am Doc Strange, the original Doc Strange. There are a few other individuals running around this world claiming to be the Doc Strange in hip-hop, and all I can say to them is, if you weren't Doc Strange before 85, 84, and technically you don't have ASCAP or any other official legal titles to use that professionally as I do, then you're not Doc Strange, or you're not Doc Strange, and that's a whole nother matter. And I may be coming to see some people real soon, but that's another story. That's an X-File. That's the dark side. That's the tales of the uncanny and swift. But my hip-hop legacy and my legacy in the culture pretty much begins in the late 70s, early 80s. I was a youngster who had an older brother who had a music crew named Music Disco. And this was in East Orange, New Jersey, the surrounding areas, Newark, Orange, Montclair. And I was a tag-along as a baby, sort of say, 9, 10 years old, hanging out with guys, 15, 14, who did parties. They did block parties. They did club events, and they did house parties. And I was always able to go, most of it as always, you know, your little brother and your parents to tell your older sibling, if he doesn't go, you can't go type thing, until I got cool enough by them to be allowed to hang out on the regular. As I got older and more experienced in hip-hop and just seeing a lot of things, I branched out on my own, and my brother and his crew, they just went about doing different things, but I stayed within the culture, well-immersed. And by 86, 87, I got introduced to the Universal Zulu Nation, or at the time, the Mighty Zulu Nation, by a guy who was my first Zulu chapter leader by the name of Fury, and shared in this chapter with brothers, a brother by the name of Chino XL, who's still making music to this day, another group called Triple Destiny with my brothers Vega and D1221, the original D12. Once again, I'm not going to point names out or point people out, but, you know, we like to believe that we were the originators of some of the things that we came in contact with in regards of an original culture of hip-hop by us, for lack of better phrases. And it just kept going from there to the point that after high school and during, set my sight at higher grounds. Then I eventually got into working for some of the labels, doing A&R work and promotions. I worked for Uptown. I promoted for Bad Boy. I did work at Mercury, Polygram, Polydor, and eventually started my own label with distribution, or sought distribution. I never really got that, but had my own publishing company, and this is going into the 90s. My group at the time, Legends of Metroid, which stood for Men Encountering Trifle Roads, over years defensively, pretty much set a high precedence for hip-hop in the realm of New Jersey, Essex County, music at a time when there were certain trend-setting groups that had a particular look, like the Naughty by Nature, Fugees, like certain other groups that had a particular look. And our look was so opposite to that, which is pretty much how my whole life has been. I've always been a, as they say, weird and uncanny kid, so strange just fit. And, of course, I have to mention one of my favorite Marvel comic book characters was Doctor Strange. So it was just easy for me to kind of associate with him because of how I felt my life was and the things that I did and how people saw me as just a different dude or a different guy in the middle of some of the people that I hung out with or some of the people that I grew up with and even in my family. And that's pretty much my story right now. And I'm sticking to it.
Okay. I know that's right. So you took on this journey of music, and with that, of course, hip-hop. I think it's important that we point out what people call hip-hop today, for the most part, is very different from what was started, some years back. the feel of it, the purpose of it, things of that nature. I know, you know, I talked to a lot of folks today who are, of course, totally, totally against it, but at the same time not really grasping or even thinking about what it was or what it had done or what it had helped to do that was, you know, very, very productive, very positive. And
right.
because it has gone so awry today, you know, rather than look at the reasons, well, maybe because it was doing something that was on point, maybe, just maybe, that's why, you know, it had to kind of take another direction, because if it had continued to educate, to inform, to awaken, to unite, that would be a problem for this system. So with that said, just help to provide a little insight into what happened, why it happened, is we're seeing today.
Right. Well, I'm going to speak, of course, with a large amount of what should and is going to be factual and a lot
mm-hmm.
more from my personal feelings, beliefs, and opinion. And I say from facts to beliefs and opinion because when we first look at hip-hop and its origins, you're talking about a culture rooted in and from music that started with indigenous people in the inner city. And there's no way, shape, or form that that could be argued that that's not the case. Because it is. So you're ultimately talking about a new phenomenon at the time in the early 70s that started to gain a momentum and a positive push and force throughout the music world that in its earliest stages was given a time frame to self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, meaning that the industry at hand, the machine and the powers that be had given rap or hip-hop a short-lived life, you know, and they thought, oh, this is not going to last, it's not going to make it, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, without going through every simple step, I'll just mention some things for the interest of time. And what we're talking about, I will mention key things to draw in the big picture of what we're discussing. When you have the first rap groups that recorded something to Wax or was signed to a label to eventually becoming platinum artists to multi-platinum artists, and changing the landscape of popular culture in Western society, what then happens is, just like a bebop, just like a jazz or rock and roll, or even blues for that matter, there becomes the attempt to attack that music from within, usurp the resources, and eventually make it the machines, or a product of the machine, so that now whatever the machine or the industry says, okay, this is how we need this thing to work for us, because this is a powerful vehicle that is changing the face of the world. You know, when you have a music being made that eventually has the people in suburban America or suburbia, the globe, singing and speaking in black vernacular or broken dialect upon broken dialect. I mean, none of us speak the King's English for the most part, so the American lexicon is a broken English. Yet, when you break that further down to what's considered slang and so forth and so on, and that is in the households of the presidents and CEOs of white corporate America and the Fortune 500 companies, then it becomes another issue. And it becomes twofold, where one side of that corporate America says, we got to get rid of this and quick because this is in my house, and I don't want this in my house. I don't want my daughter saying this. I don't want my daughter dating these. I don't want my son looking like these guys. And then you have the other side that says, we need to exploit this to the fullest and make more money off of this. Now, again, part of this is some of what I believe, some of what I feel versus all of what's statistically and factually sound, although my statements resonate the facts. So as we go along into, you know, a time when hip-hop music itself, we spoke about, and I'm going into the mid-80s to the early 90s, or early 80s to the early 90s, if I had to say a decade, a whole decade of hip-hop where you had messages like, you know, Grandpa Bam himself with peace, unity, love, and having fun, to groups that talked about the red, black, and green, and the movement of knowledge of self. You had, you know, your native tongue with De La Soul, Jungle Brothers Tribe Called Quest. You had your, you know, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and their message, Crash Crew and their message, my uncle, my big brother Yoda, and their message. You know, there was groups, you know, Fearless Four with Problems of the World Today. This is, you're talking like 1983 or so, where people are talking about Problems of the World Today. And if you put that record on today, it still is relevant, you know, because these issues are still needing to be addressed or being pushed under the rug. And then as you get into the Brand Nubians and you get into other groups that came out afterwards, still pushing a message of loving oneself, being proud and not ashamed to be of color and be natural and wear natural clothing, go back to the kente cloth, go back to the mud cloth, pick up a book, you know, names of great historical figures in our past that we didn't get in school, we didn't get in the history books from the classes that we sat in, but we got them from hip-hop. And then we went and studied them. We went and researched them to whereas into the late 80s, early 90s, when that vehicle or that system said, like you mentioned, we can't have them further educating the masses because if we do, this is going to be a problem for us. So here comes the cadence of gangster music. Here comes the cadence of you know, the misogyny of women on a higher level, or the usage and the promotion of the usage of the word, you know, the if I have to say the N-word, I mean myself on any given Sunday, I'm just going to say the word itself without censorship, but, you know, for where we are right now, the N-word and the B-word, and it just started to be used in abundance. And when that becomes a commodity, that every time you use the N-word or the B-word, it's a cha-ching or a money sign, then therein lies the root of the problem, because how do you tell someone, stop using these words, stop giving this message, but they know to a certain degree, if I use those words, if I spit that message out, I'm going to get paid probably more than I will kicking some knowledge. Or trying to teach somebody to do something right versus project a negative image. And ultimately, it led to what I scrutinized on a few college campuses in some symposiums that I sat on upstate New York, where the topic was dealing with how do we get away from the usage of the N-word and the B-word. And I said, until people take a stand against it, we'll never get away from it. I said, you know, it's ironic that in the time frame that I've been exposed to hip-hop, and I say at a period in time when we had least control of the music, being that we weren't the CEOs, we weren't the heads of the record labels, we didn't have independence and people getting their publishing, you had a more positive image, like the one I mentioned, early 80s to the early 90s, versus when you get to the mid to the late 90s, when you had CEOs and presidents of companies. I mean, you had Jay-Z, you had Puffy, you had the guys down south, Master P and a few other people, Russell Simmons even, you know, they all owned or had control of the labels more than we did in the early 80s to the 90s, early 90s. But yet the image, the message was worse in the late 90s. Because at that point, to me, it was the, and Spike Lee made a great movie some time ago called Bamboozled. And to me, Bamboozled represents the exact mentality, or at least the disposition that some people took regarding just letting it all hang out to make a, you know, for the buck. So that's my personal reflection on things, and it leads us to where we are now, and the question and the topic at hand, to whereas how much further, like you mentioned, brothers and sisters, you know, at what point do you get up and say enough is enough? You know, and how much longer are you going to allow your music to be taken away from you by the simple fact that you're giving it to people because you want to make songs with these? And first and foremost, I don't want anyone to think, and I don't necessarily, I'm not so much concerned what people think, but I want to make it clear that in no way, shape, or form am I anti-multi-racist making this music. And I'll say here now, one of my favorite groups of all time and still to this day is the Beastie Boys, for what they gave to a music. I'll speak about Third Base. I'll speak about Milkbone. These are all Caucasian artists, but the difference to me was the sincerity and their genuine placement in understanding what this thing was and how they lived it. It wasn't a situation with them that I felt that they did it just to make money because this is the new hot music. You know, I don't see Mike D or MCA or Pete Nice as a Miley Cyrus or Justin Bieber. You know, I don't see them in the same where, you know, you come from a people who, you know, I don't think Billy Ray would have had anybody at the dinner table prior to his daughter's open and candid rant through hip-hop and whatever, I won't even say hip-hop, I'll say rap, because that, too, is something that, you know, I want to mention, where the turn of events led the world to put rap over hip-hop. And, I mean, there's so many components to this conversation that I know we won't be able to do this in one segment, because what I'm talking about now could kind of careen me off to digress into a whole other topic, and the topic at hand of, you know, misrepresentation, whitewash, and the music being flushed down a drain, we might digress from that because I go into where hip-hop and rap separated, or where hip-hop, the culture, you know, each of its components of DJing, b-boying, and breakdancing, or graffiti, and so forth, and where rap itself, where some consider is the brat child, some say the bastard child, some say whatever child it is, that child is like the child now who stood up and divorced the parents, or took the parents to court, and now won that decision because of how society has huddled around rap, and rap supersedes hip-hop, to whereas now people are rap artists, but they're not hip-hop artists. but they play the name game, or they make things synonymous when it fits a purpose. You know, when something negative happens at a rap event, they'll say it's a hip-hop thing to make hip-hop look bad, when it's really a guy that raps, has no knowledge of what hip-hop is, doesn't really care what hip-hop is, and that's just what it is. I mean, there's artists that I had to school just about a month ago at a cookout in Harlem. We do a cookout every year, one of the chapters, Zulu chapters from the Bronx. They do each one, feed one cookout in Harlem. Africa Bambaataa was there. There was a few other pioneers there. And I overhear a person telling a young artist who's supposed to be, quote-unquote, a hip-hop or rap artist, that man is responsible for you being who you are. And the young man said, no, I doubt that seriously much. He is not responsible for me being who I am. And I had to kind of stop in my tracks, back up and say, honestly, yes, he is. I said, and if you truly call yourself a rapper or a hip-hop artist or an MC, whatever you call yourself, I know what you're doing. I said, that man is exactly, definitely responsible for you. I said, in the history books, you look up who started this culture of hip-hop, there are three names attached to it. I said, one is Kool Herc and his movement. He had the Herculoids. I said, two, Grandmaster Flash and his movement or his group was the Furious Five. I said, and then you have that man sitting right there, Africa Bambaataa, and everybody that you see in this part just about represents that movement, which was the Zulu Nation, coming from Black Spades. I said, so if you don't understand that and you don't care to understand that, how do you even call yourself an MC or a hip-hop artist? You are totally detached from the root origin of this culture and technically this music, so therefore you're something other than altogether. You might as well call yourself what the American Music Committee a few years back labeled this new thing, urban contemporary pop music. And that's what you might as well be considered now. And that's technically something that I believe has recently been created to further push out hip-hop as its prominent music genre. Because technically what is, when you break that urban contemporary pop music, what does that mean? But that's when we get to BET and the likes of the people who won BET these last awards. You know, and that in itself speaks of, well, who owns BET in the first place? You know, and that becomes our greater concern when we still have a channel called BET, but it's owned by Viacom or whoever owns it at this point now, which from the last time I checked was about as white as domino sugar.
As with most of the now more popular radio stations, know, as well.
As well as the labels, you know, what used to be a plethora of different labels, which allowed for a little bit more versatility, a lot more identity, are swallowed up by what they call the Four Horsemen or the Big Three now, which is Warner Brothers, Sony, and I forget the other one, you know, but whatever, it's like only three labels now that own everything. And I just recently found out due to a friend of mine who has a vivid and very resourceful and colorful YouTube page. He got a warning from YouTube recently because of whatever he said was, they said was some type of infringement on copyrights. And it was a Motown video, but it was Warner Brothers who came after him, because as of last week, I just found out Motown is owned by Warner Brothers now. So that whole catalog now, just like Prince, and why it's hard to find music from Prince, older music from Prince somewhere, because Warner Brothers and all these other labels got brought up, a lot of these labels, they're just, you know, they dictate what you get to hear and what you don't get to hear. And hip-hop, to me, hip-hop was the testing ground for that, because there were a lot of labels that put out a lot of rap music or hip-hop music from the 80s to the 90s, and none of these labels exist anymore. And they all bought out, and when you start doing the research of them, this one was owned by the son, that one was the nephew, that one was the cousin, that one was the brother. So all they ended up doing was consolidating all of the links to pretty much take over from within.
Wow. This is very interesting because, you know, what we've been talking about, my brother, over the past weeks is connecting the dots. And in doing so, seeing how, as a people, we are being shifted and moved and removed all over the country. And it's so interesting to see how this is happening on so many different levels. But yet, it's right in front of us. It's right before our eyes. We're seeing how the media is becoming totally controlled. We're seeing how our history, cultures, voices are slowly but surely being diminished. We're seeing how our people are being shifted out of the various communities that we are so familiar with. Our culture has been able to thrive, et cetera, et cetera. We're seeing how what little bit of education that was available is now also being kind of redirected even more so, and so forth and so on. All across the board, these things are happening every day right in front of our faces. And we're talking about it, but you're not hearing many come up with what are we going to do about it. Now, of course, you and I talked earlier today about, you know, some of what we're talking about right now, as we have in the past few months, actually. And we've got to begin to open up these forums and begin to have our people, those who are serious, those who are going to be committed, what are we going to do? Now, family, as indicated, this is just a preliminary dialogue, because surely some of you are hearing some things that are new. And what we feel we have to now do is to bridge some of the gaps, to recognize the fact that there is a gap. Now, do we want to keep it that way? I don't think we do. In fact, I know we better not, really. And if you look at the history, what you will see is it's almost a natural occurrence, meaning when you look at jazz, right, when you look at the days of Louis Armstrong, Fats Waller, you know, that whole era, what you will see is as it developed from New Orleans and other locations, changes occurred. But when it became a point that it began to get, like, so far away from the scope, something else went into effect to bring it back in, you see. So essentially, if you even go back to ragtime, ragtime really was a prelude to jazz, or what we call jazz with Louis Armstrong and others. So I'm saying there was always different changes and intervals in the music. And note, each time that it happened, it created a kind of a stir with the generation prior to that.
Right,
because once Louis Armstrong made such a head, you know, a stronghold, then you had people that came in. You had Count Basie. You had Duke Ellington with the big band sound. But, you know, it kind of, you know, so So there are developments that occur, but when you begin to see certain things happen that distract us or take us away from the real feeling of it, that's when it becomes very problematic. Now, note, I'm saying this because, and as Dr. Strange has said, we've got to talk more about this. Remember, we had in the 1950s R&B or rock and roll or whatever you want to call it, but look at the beauty of what we had, the Planters, the Drifter. I mean, so many different groups.
And
the harmonies, the sounds, the presentation, all of that. Well, okay, then came, you know, what they call rock and roll. But see,
right.
No, it was a easy transition, but not what happened. From the 50s, here you had these other people start coming in. All right? The Righteous Brothers.
Right.
See, I do my homework, family. I do my, because I love our music, and I'm trying to better understand what game these people are trying to play or what, not just trying. I looked at Max Roach, for example,
mm-hmm.
and other drummers, and then I saw Gene Krupa. I'm like, wait a minute, this is not the same thing. And this is 1940s and 50s, mind you.
Right.
I wasn't born. So, you know, so, but I'm saying they do this every time. Don't we see this? If you look at our music and history and culture, you're going to see it every time. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, we had all these wonderful singers, and then all of a sudden we had Tony Bennett and Mel Torme.
Right.
So the point being, here we are now, you know, in the 21st century. We had something that was a continuation, because, note, a part of a lot of hip-hop was sampling. Sampling what? Music that James Brown and, you know, I mean, stuff that was really the fundamentals of certain parts of our history and culture and development of music. So what I'm saying, family, is this. It goes without saying that once we have something and once it has a certain type of impact and power, historically speaking, something else happens to try to throw us off track. We got to be smart enough to know and to see that that's what's happening. Back to you, Doc.
My sister. Yeah, I just wanted to know how much time do we have, because I definitely, there's a few more points, and I also wanted to make sure that we didn't miss the opportunity to discuss that letter.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, we got plenty of time, so you go right ahead. You got it. Back to you.
I'm going to respond or add to two more things, or two things that you mentioned. First, when you mentioned ragtime, and ironically and interestingly enough, the last couple of weeks I've been dealing with ragtime, the music, because as I mentioned to you, we do a show on Friday nights. My DJ and I, that's DJ Too Fast, we do a show on Smash Mouth FM called Strange Nation with Too Fast, the tour guide. And we play everything. There's no particular lineup. There's no particular genre except that it's world music. So one particular segment, we played ragtime itself. And, you know, I had some comments about it, because ragtime, the song itself, has actually been sort of measured up to the Ice Cream song. But if you listen to ragtime, the song, you listen to the quote-unquote Ice Cream Man song, it's a little different, but yet it has similarities. And then most recently, that song has been brought up on the internet as being the actual Watermelon Derby grotesque racial song. So as I had to explain on the air, or I wanted to explain on the air a few things, And I bring that up to bring up right before I called you, I actually talked to my daughter tonight, and she looked at me. She said, "Harry, I listened to the watermelon song. I listened to the ice cream song." I said,
mm-hmm.
"Well, when I first told you, my daughter is 16. I said, when I first told you about that song, you said you didn't want to hear it. So she was
right.
like, yeah, I know, but I heard the ice cream truck outside. So I said, so you went and looked it up. I said, okay, cool. I said, but understand that that song actually stems from what was created by a black man, ragtime song, the father of ragtime, Scott Joplin. I said,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people don't know who Scott Joplin is. I
right.
said, and part of what the reason we played the song, the reason why I continue to push certain buttons about things, because let's take music back that's ours. And that's part of what we're talking about tonight. Not allowing a person to define what a song is or what a particular genre is because you decided to take it and do something with it, but this thing was purely and historically, truthfully created by someone of color. And I said it wasn't until Scott Joplin's Ragtime actually got played in the movie Ragtime with James
mm-hmm.
Cagney, with Henry Rollins, and
yep.
whoever else was in the movie. It wasn't until that movie, but more so The Sting with Paul Newman. I mean, not The Sting, excuse me, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid with
mm-hmm.
Paul Newman and Robert Redford. It wasn't until that song got played, if I'm not mistaken, that they actually started to give the estate and the family of Scott Joplin the royalties for that song because it was heard and someone came out and started to question where the royalties going to because a white man did not make this song and no one white owns the rights to Scott Joplin's material. So I've been telling people, you know, you go look it up. I said, if you can't find anything on Scott Joplin, I said, look up Billy Dee Williams' filmography. He played Scott
mm-hmm.
Joplin in a movie, and it was great. So that's one thing that I say that even when we hear of certain terms and titles, we have no clue sometimes because, like you said, if we don't take it upon ourselves to listen to those who know and record the information and take it back so we can learn, then we will go along clueless and think that jazz was made by Kenny G or rock and roll
right.
was started by Jerry Lewis. Yeah,
yeah,
Elvis or Jerry Lewis or whoever else. And
mm-hmm.
this is preposterous, you know. And
mm-hmm.
the second thing that I was going to mention was when you talk about, you know, hip-hop and sampling for the most part of the origins of the music was based on the rhythm and the DJ,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
right.
part of why hip-hop and rap or hip-hop is not rap and rap is not hip-hop because hip-hop was a culture that was very prominent or very necessary to have or take place with the DJ because
mm-hmm.
the DJ was the middleman. He was the main component of making everything go. If you didn't
right.
have a DJ, how did you have music? How did the B-boys start to break? How did the rappers or the MCs start to do what they needed or wanted to do?
Right.
So
right.
when you have and you think about early hip-hop and you had a lot of groups and their names started like Grandmaster Flash, who was the DJ,
mm-hmm.
and the Furious Five. You know, you started having all the groups where you would hear the DJ's name, you know, somewhere in the mix. Eric
mm-hmm.
B. and Rakim, DJ
mm-hmm.
Jazzy
mm-hmm.
Jeff and the Fresh Prince,
mm-hmm.
so forth and so on, to where
mm-hmm.
as you start losing the identity of the DJ and all of a sudden you just got a rapper. You just got
right.
an MC, no DJ.
Right.
And DJing and MCing at the same time is not necessarily impossible, but it's kind of buffoonish because it's like trying to surf and play tennis at the same time. It's just two things, two types of sports or athletes in a particular situation that it just doesn't happen that way. And that the eradication or the removal of the DJ is where things started turning to where it is now, to where even you have an issue with the real DJ or the turntablist, who is a technician on the wheels, looking at a lot of notoriety that's coming from these candy corn DJs like a Paris Hilton or like, I forget this other guy's name, you know, where you're talking about people getting 100 to 500 or 75,000 to do a gig, and it's not because they have true DJ abilities, because they're some pop iconic star, you know, and people want to book them and say, oh, we had Paris Hilton do our party. So you pay because of your name and not your ability, thus taking away from the DJs who should be getting paid. And this becomes the problem. And then it's perpetuated by, and we're getting into this next segment, sis, if we can, perpetuated by the people who this very letter was sent to. And this letter I'm referring to is a letter, and actually the letter that, you know, Africa Bambaataa, the letter is not really just by him. The letter was actually comprised or composed by the Media Council of the Zulu Nation, which is a few brothers. Bambaataa himself is on it. There's a brother by the name of Muhammad Islam, who is many years in hip-hop, behind the scenes, dealing with artists, and very knowledgeable of what it is, and he's on the front lines. A brother by the name of Ahmed Henderson, who, you know, these are names that, you know, you can easily look up and see their amount of contributions to hip-hop, their contributions to the Zulu Nation and to the world. There's another brother by the name of Mick Benson, or Mickey Benson. We call him Mick Benzo. Same thing, you know, still on the front lines, doing work to this day, to this very minute that we're speaking. They're probably out in the field continuing to usher in the truth in hip-hop and still have a pulse on today's music, because they're directly involved with the artist one way or another. And there was another component to this letter, was one of our brothers in Boston, one of our Zulu brothers in Boston, because, you know, for those who may not know, the Universal Zulu Nation is just that. It's worldwide, with chapters in many countries, you know, other than America. So there's many components who are concerned about the true status of hip hop, and the preservation of it. So this letter that we're talking about, a few weeks back, it was actually sent not just to a DJ, but it was sent to this particular internet group called World Star. And for those who are familiar with World Star, and which is part of why this letter was sent, World Star is, to me, what's the guy's name? Jerry Springer.
Oh, goodness.
Of hip hop component / exploiting of a culture on the internet. I mean, if you any given time you go to WorldStar and look up any video, you'll see something ridiculous. You'll see something out of pocket. You'll see some cooning. You'll see some stepping flex. You just see something that you're going to shake your head. You know, very rarely have I seen something on WorldStar that actually made me smile in a way of glee, happiness, or admiration. You know, I didn't see anything other than something. I was like, come on, man. You know, this is exactly what we're talking about. So with the brothers from the nation, pretty much just got tired of it, you know, and at that move, decided to make a move and say, you know, enough is enough. And you got to be held accountable for some things. You know, if you're not going to stand for something, then know and believe that we will. And this is part of a larger movement that is taking place. You know, it's just unfortunate that news and media, whether it's TMZ, whether it's your local urban radio stations in your own area, and some of these other entertainment news icons, they don't want to report something that is broadcasting or talking about making a difference for the positive or bringing about the righteousness in a situation that's wicked and vile. Because unfortunately, we all know that that's not news. Something righteous, somebody not killing themselves, somebody not getting raped, that's not news. That's not the news, at least, that they're going to show. You know, so this is where we are. And there are some movements that's beginning to stand up. There's some movements that's beginning to change the diagram somewhat to make a difference and say, you know, enough is enough. You know, there's some artists out there. I don't know of too many of the new artists. There are some out there. You know, I'm still in the mix somewhat with hoping to come across some of the people and have a chance to not only just sit and benefit from what they're going to give to the world as the next generation with a positive message, but also hoping to be able to have them benefit from me, from being able to give from my experiences and the knowledge that I have from being around. And hope that there's going to be a chance to make a difference, and it's not just going to be a message or a mission that's going to die with those of your generation or my generation. And then after the next couple of generations, that's just it. We're just in oblivion. You know, hopefully that's not the case, although some people have stated that, like, that's what they feel. You know, and it's it's frightening, you know. But as long as there's breath in our lungs, you know, this is the mission. This is the objective, that we continue doing what we're doing. And hopefully, in a positive manner, that energy becomes infectious and it spreads to the next group, and they stand up, and the next group, and they stand up, and the next group, and they stand up.
Well,
and
you know,
I just remembered, if I can say one more thing, and then I'm going to be quiet. I just remembered part of what I was going to say when I brought up the sampling. What was mentioned, it was on a KRS album, a Boogie Down production album back in the day, and it was saying, and I bring this point up because this is very relative, because this is a lot of what caused the shift in power in hip-hop as well. I said, you know, in the 50s and 60s, and this the parody of the skit on the album was of two white people talking, and they were laughing and jokingly making a statement. They said, isn't karma something else? They said, in the 50s and 60s, we stole music from them as a rock and roll, and now in the 90s, that they're sampling it, we're suing them for that same music. And it was real, because this is very well what happened, whereas a lot of, as we know, artists from the 50s and 60s, music was ripped off artists. And then in the 90s, in the early 2000s, but more so in the 90s, there were a lot of lawsuits that took place against rap artists who sampled music that, you know, you talk about people that came out of nowhere. And that became their reclaim to fame. That became their rebirth and their reestablishment, whereas some of these lawsuits were for millions of dollars, and they won. And it ruined the career of some big names in hip-hop. You know, and we're talking even to the degree of albums having to be pulled off the shelf and everything else. You know, and it was an unfortunate blow, but at the same token, you kind of sit there and say, come on, that was a slick tactic y'all move. Because, like you said, James Brown didn't sue anybody. He's got probably some of the most sampled music in hip-hop next to a few other groups, Roy Ayers or somebody else. You know, I myself sampled for Roy Ayers in the 90s, and I got the chance to speak to him about the song. And, you know, much respect to Roy Ayers. He didn't say but one word. He just asked me, what kind of music is it? Is it positive music, or, you know, you're not talking about anything crazy? I said, no, the music is about this, that, the song is that. And he asked me, well, which song was it exactly? And he thought it was either Running Away or something off of Ubiquity. I said, actually, it's this song. And I told him what song it was, and he was surprised and shocked because it wasn't a typical song that has been sampled from him. And he was like, I am curious. He's like, you have to send me a copy of that because I'm curious to know how that came out. And I was just, I was devastated at his kindness and his laid-back demeanor. You know, I'm on the phone with Roy Ayers about sample clearance. I'm on edge. I'm a little nervous. And he just was like, hey, man, everything's cool. You know, you can do it. You guys, I salute you guys. And I'm like, we salute you. And he invited me to a set, and, you know, it was cool. Everything was cool. Hung out, and, you know, that's another page in my history books. And I learned a lot from him. So that makes a difference.
I think it's very important, again, that we have these dialogues because it's necessary to bring about clarity. And before we elaborate further on the letter and then go to our next segment, the one thing I wanted to bring clarity to our listeners is, of course, that in talking about the DJ component in dealing with hip-hop, I think we also have to look at something else that, for me, was a dynamic when you examine business. You see, remembering that, for the most part, the music industry was pretty much under control of other people, as we all know, from an industry standpoint. I think it's important to note that hip-hop created something that really kind of jarred the music industry, because during that period of time, it was, for the most part, you know, you had to have studio, you know, kind of involvement, which often entailed a lot of money, which often entailed having to, you know, do a lot of contracting, paying a lot of musicians and so forth and on. So you being, you know, a black person, an African person, unless you had those contacts or you made those deals, you weren't getting in those doors. So what hip-hop did in utilizing the DJ was to create, and then, of course, the other sound, the bebop, it created the sounds, and it created the music in such a way that you didn't have to go to them. Now, that was upsetting. So, see, while we looked at it on one angle of it, in terms of, you know, bringing forth culture, bringing forth information, et cetera, you know, just creating a whole, you know, different kind of genre, whatever, on the other edge of that, that created an upset in the business world because folks were able to maneuver and create their own tapes, distribute them, this and that, and not have to go to these other people to do all of that. It was a very creative and almost, I would dare say, an ingenious kind of way to begin to tap into an industry that, for the most part, was being controlled by others.
Right.
So there's a lot of ways that this really has to be examined if, in fact, we're going to be able to make moves going forward. Now, family, I can assure you that we're taking the time to break some of this down, and we're going to have to break it down even further as we proceed in the months to come. But there is a reason. There's a definite reason, because we do have some plans as to how we can begin to move forward. For example, over the years, of course, many have heard of the hip-hop summits that have been held. Well, certainly the proposal is going to be put out there that, you know, Zulu Nation, Million Woman Movement, Hip Hop Sisters, whomever that really wants to do something progressive and productive, we need to be holding our own summit.
Right.
With the intention of creating our own label, with the intention of developing our own artists, with the intention of providing the type of insight and training, et cetera, et cetera.
True.
So, again, there's a method to the madness, which is not madness at all, really. We're talking about examining situations so that we can bring about the types of solutions that must. So we're going to be telling you more about that as we proceed in the next month. So we're just going to take a few more minutes just to kind of elaborate on the letter. And, again, we want to thank Sister Manira for forwarding the article to us so that, you know, I could get in contact with our brother and, you know, have this discussion and prepare to move forward and how we need to start addressing some of these other so-called radio personalities or TV people or whomever. But, again, we have to become more organized and certainly do this in such a way that is going to really create the kinds of synergy that has to happen. So, brother, we're going to take a few more moments just to kind of elaborate on the letter that was sent, you know, what some of the things that it entailed, and then we're going to go to our last segment, which is really all connected, because what the reports that we've gotten this week is three reports of three women, three black women, three African women who were either pushed around by cops and or called, spit on, called names, and so forth. We're talking about three different situations. And that's just this past week.
Unacceptable.
And so, you know, we have to, people got to realize that this is going down. We told them this was going to happen. And here now, they don't care about any of us. It was obvious what they were doing with our men. That was always obvious. That was always an issue. It's going to always be an issue. But what we are now seeing is what is going on with our women and girls. But we'll go back to that in a few minutes. Let's wrap this segment up. And, again, give us a little insight into the letter that was sent.
Okay. Like I said, are you there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like I said, the letter pretty much was a response to Worldstar. And, again, Worldstar is what it is. I'm not going to mention a whole lot of whatever to them or about them, but It was titled, if I'm not mistaken, Signs That the World is Coming to an End or something like that. And pretty much what was saying or what was being said was that there was a call, as they say, it was rumors of a call to boycott WorldStar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was put out there for what it was worth. I mean, anybody that continues to support WorldStar, it was like, in so many ways, just there is no or should be no support of WorldStar because it does nothing for you. It does nothing for us. And some of what was mentioned in the letter talked about, you know, don't just brush this off as someone's opinion, or don't brush this off, because many times when you have what's considered old school artists, as they all say, you know, you're an old school artist, and I don't want to hear what you have to say because you just don't understand, or the music has bypassed you, or you're not relevant. Mm. You know, it was almost like, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure if this was the conversation you and I had earlier or a conversation I had with someone else who was talking about Rihanna's. Rihanna had some comments about TLC.
Mm-hmm.
Because TLC made mention of something to them about not having to take off clothes,
right,
to sell music, and we sold a lot of music. They sold
right.
a lot of music. I think this might have been a conversation I had with one of my partners, another artist from my time who's still doing things, a guy by the name of Jay Bird J. And, you know, we were talking about that, just the state of things, and, you know, how, as you mentioned, this generation gap, whereas someone who practically created a genre of music and is still in the music can give a message and you miss the message totally because you just think it's somebody who is out of touch, out of sync, or trying to get money, fame, and notoriety off of what you have going on. So this wasn't the attempt. This wasn't the objective. It was increasingly the objective to get people to realize, one, the site, the content, and the videos that they have on WorldStar are graphic, they're extremely violent, and, you know, let's not act like this is not the case. Let's really look at what you're giving to people. You know, I mean, one of the first times that I saw WorldStar, one of my nephews, he showed me a video of two girls fighting, and he knew one of the girls, or both the girls, and, you know, I laugh, but then when you think about it, you say, this is not that funny, because mm-hmm. is this what constantly happens? And it wasn't so much that they actually made the video, but people actually started to become very conscious of the fact that if I do something outlandish, I could put it on WorldStar and become famous. So this became what I imagined was the growing consensus of people who just started to put every and anything on WorldStar for their 2 minutes to 5 minutes of fame. And I mean something as graphic as, you know, a derelict or a homeless man being stomped out by a bunch of kids, and they laughing about it and showing it on TV, to something as pornographic as right on the 6th train, broad daylight going uptown into the Bronx, It's some girls performing fellatio on the train, daylight, right on tape. I mean, being filmed and they put it right on TV. I mean, right on World Star, and it's on the internet. I say TV, but I mean the internet. You know, so it's a whole demeanor that they have, like this out of the ghetto type of posture that they're pushing, but they push it under the banner of this is what the hip hoppers do. Believe this is what the hip hoppers are about, and we enjoy this type of lifestyle. We promote and push this type of lifestyle. So the media council was like, absolutely not, in no way, shape, or form. And then they went into some specific cases that they spotlighted and highlighted and showcased, to whereas even some of the nicknames that they got was like, World Star had become known as the CNN of the ghetto. So one of the brothers who actually was the actual spokesman for this letter, you know, he just was like, no, enough is enough. And we're going to do something about this, and we're going to speak to you about it in a manner that you understand. We're not playing. We're dead serious, and it's not about a threat. This is not anything for you to look at as some kind of violent move to shut you down, but it was a serious effort and statement to be made from a group or, quote-unquote, a nation with solidarity in this culture and solidarity around the world. And to let them know that, look, we don't like it, and whether you realize it or like it or not, we're going to do something about it. Because can we no longer allow in this new year and a movement against the people who pretty much don't respect positivity or don't want to apply their movement in music, whether it's hip-hop, R&B, house, reggae, whatever. If you have a plan to be seditious, if you have a plan to usurp the resources of the common man and look to use, you know, a platform of negativity and promote that, and, you know, you're not pushing righteousness and you don't want to stand for something positive, then we're going to address this situation one way or another.
Now, I want you to hold that point and hold that note for a couple of reasons. One, we're going to run out of time very shortly on our web stream, but those of you who are on our podcast, you can stay there. We will continue this dialogue. Those of you who are on the webcast, you might want to call in on the telephone podcast, which is 646-652-2232, if you want to continue to hear, because we're going to lose the web stream in about 3 minutes. However, two things I wanted to add, and that is, again, one of the reasons why we are having these dialogues, because, again, family, it is so important that we do whatever we can. Now, we just heard how a letter was written. It was a compilation of several different groups, organizations, or representation. The fact is, the letter was written. It's available. If you don't have it or if you find that you can't get it, please feel free to email us at nationalmwm, and we'll send it to you. The point being, we've got to start taking action to do things. Now, to fast forward for a moment, officer arrested, Tommen Sheets. This is a police officer in Georgia. This past week, this was posted. It says a Georgia police officer was placed on administrative leave without pay after an African-American black woman reported that the officer spit on her and called her a racial slur. Now, this was a sister who was 27 years old. Michelle Smith says an off-duty officer named Thomas Sheets followed her closely, eventually bumping her car with his while honking his horn. Griffin says it was only after she pulled into a parking lot where she was going to get a pizza that she learned that Sheets had been following her. Now, family, I want you to hear the reason why he did this. He said, "Why the blank you going 35 miles per hour on a 45 mile per hour road?" Did y'all hear me? He said she was going 35 miles in a 45 mile zone, and this is why he spit on her and called her name. Now, let me fast forward again. White police officer repeatedly punches black woman in the face. This, again, posted on July 4th. This is in California. There's a video available. A video shows a cop punching the woman on Highway I-10 in Los Angeles, California. The woman is seen walking away from the officer, but he then tackles her from behind, slams her on the ground, and delivers several blows to her head with his fist. Another man who appears to be a pedestrian came to the cop's aid and holds the woman down as the cop tried to handcuff her. Now, I'm going to stop right there, okay? Because, see, all of this, again, is related. Whenever we do not protect those things that have been fought for so much, so dearly, then the enemy, whichever you want to call it, whatever you want to call it, is going to do whatever it can and will do. Now we are seeing outright attacks on black women. Here's the last story for tonight, which is the worst one. And again, this is coming out of Detroit. And again, let's connect the dots. A few months ago, we were talking about Chicago. We had Chairman Fred Hampton on. We talked about the various kinds of murders and stuff that's taking place in Chicago. And, of course, Chairman Fred told us that, you know, some of that stuff was calculated and suspect. Now, last week we got a report of a woman, a black woman, African woman, was found murdered, shot twice. Her two children are still missing. This week we get another report from Detroit. 2-year-old girl murdered at point-blank range. July 2nd, filed under children. Witnesses in the Detroit area says they saw a man walk up to two kids playing in a yard where he first shot a 2-year-old girl point-blank, then turned the gun on her family. He shot the baby, said Andy Anderson, 51, of Detroit, who was standing near a car when the shooting started. I thought, no, he didn't. And then he turned the gun and started shooting on the porch. Anderson knew immediately that the 2-year-old was dead, according to a report by FreePress.com. As about 9 shots rang out, Anderson ducked behind the car. I tried to scoot up under the car because I thought he was going to kill everybody. I'm going to stop there. Now, I mean, what more do I need to say? So last week when I posted in our e-blast about the formation of the African Women's Army, one of our brothers sent me a message back and saying, well, you know, there were some concerns about the concept of an African Women's Army. I'll elaborate on it a little later. The point being, excuse me. what?
Wow.
Again, I mean, there are different types of armies, needless to say. But the point being, we got something to be doing something. Really.
True.
Really? I mean, come on. Now, before I was able to find this report, a sister literally texted me and told me that this happened. So this is not just something that I'm reading, you know, out of a newspaper. I'm telling you that sisters are calling us, contacting us, letting us know that this stuff is happening in their community, in their city. So going back to how we kind of started, and it's this. We are seeing the projection of things that are being placed before us for a reason. These females that are being fronted into our world, the projection of what they are and what they represent helps to lessen the concern. It helps to reduce the caring. This is all a calculated move. So we must begin to recognize and speak up against the sisters. I'm saying this specifically to you, as well as to the brothers. I'm saying sisters. I'm not hearing sisters' voices. When Nicki Minaj put that thing up there show on her album with Malcolm X.
Wow. Yeah. That was ridiculous.
I mean, come on. Sisters should have been stepping to her. Really, we all should have been, but sisters should have been saying, yo, wait a minute.
Right. Hold on, man. Hold on. Time out.
Yes. I mean, all the shit, but I'm saying woman to woman? There should have been some noise.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
You see, so the point being, family, we've got to step this up, okay? If you have a comment, I know we kind of ran behind time, but it's okay. Because we need to have these dialogues. We need to get it all out. We need to cover the bases. And whatever it takes for us to do that, we're going to do it. So if you have a comment, a question, whatever, please feel free to push one now. And we certainly will. We're going to continue. We're going to have more conversations about this. Summer's here. And, you know, for some of us, that's like energy. So we're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff very soon, you know, for the next couple of months to really begin to focus in on some of these issues. Before we go to your calls or questions or what have you, I do want to let you know that we need your help, okay? We need your support. Doc and I talked about the formation of certain things that we're going to be talking more to you about. But I can tell you the Million Women Movement will begin going out and holding talent searches so that we can produce our own people. So if you have a group, an organization, or something that you're working with or whatever, and you want to partner with us, let us know. If we don't do this, who will? And again, we're not looking for corporations to sponsor what we're doing. That's very important. If you don't understand that by now, then I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, we're going to go to our live line again, and we have a caller at, well, let's see, 6836. We thank you for tuning in and hanging in, and we welcome your comment or your question. 6836, your mic is open.
Yes, hi, I'm back again. And I just
want
to, as I always say, and we can begin immediately and easily to be more humane by calling children children. You just mentioned we reduce the caring of a people. We can increase our care. And it's so simple. Just call the children children. It's all a pattern. And you'll hear the word kids. That's all you hear. And that's something simple and easy, calling the children children, the adults men and women. And all of these things are happening to keep us off point. You know, all this about homosexuality, that's high on the, that is one of the most distracting things that's happening right now.
Mm.
It takes us away from our humanity. But it's easy enough to start calling our children what they are, children, so that they can feel human.
I totally agree. But I also have to go to the next step or the next level because, you know, the reality is if we don't have our own institutions, be it education systems, be it our own businesses, be it whatever, then the reinforcement of whatever we try to do is not going to be, it's not going to be put in place. It's not going to be intact. And how do we know this? Because we see families that have attempted to raise the children in a certain way, all right, try to give them the best diet, try to give them the best education, try to show them culture, whatever, and they still turn out but wild. Why? Because, and I mean, even in terms of some of the people who were great contributors in our history, look at their children, some of them. Why? Because if we don't have stuff in place to help keep them on track, we can call them whatever. If we don't have the things to reinforce what we try to do with them, the system is going to have its way.
Yes.
And I'm just saying, I'm just speaking truth here. When you look at what happened with Malcolm Latif Shabazz and many other children whose parents made tremendous sacrifices, if things are not put in place to help these children stay on course, it's a disaster. So,
yeah,
so I agree. We listen, and I'm saying that because that young brother's spirit, you know, speaks to me often, as with others. If we don't institute, we've got to create our own whatever.
And all of this is true, and it's all true and needed and well. But this is something that can be done instantly. Calling the children,
How do we get people to do that?
We just do it.
See, no. If that was true, my sister, we would not be in this predicament. It can't be just do it. See, We have the good intentions and we want these things, but by now we have to know how do you make these things happen? How's it going to really happen? And see, that's where we kind of lose it right there. We have to create something or things that's going to make these things occur, that's going to put it in place, and do it in such a way where there's enough people doing it, you see. But if I do it, if brother do it, if you do it, that's fine. But how does the masses, how do they see in a reasonable time period? Just, we've got to do better at this. But again, I totally agree. But as I agree, I have to also think about how to have this thing happen in a reasonable period of time where it can be effective. We're up against a time thing right now. These people are coming at us left and right. So we've got to, you know, as they say, walk and chew bubblegum at the same time.
Right.
That's what we've got to do.
And I think the process really starts just with a start. You know, and not constantly sitting at a table talking about it and being satisfied or there are some components that's just satisfied with having a photo op showing up somewhere close to the problem at hand, or in the problem at hand in the daytime, while situations may have took place at night or what have you. You want to show up for a photo op in the daytime and not address the issue with being hands-on. It's just mouth almighty. You know, and I think for what it's worth, those are the steps to doing something. Whereas, like you mentioned, if we don't put something in place, we will continue to have generation after generation derailed by institutionalization. And it's just going to get worse. It's just going to get worse.
This is why we have to be able to show. We have to set the example, but it has to be in such a way. You know, if you have 200 children, and those 200 children are, you know, excelling in such a way that is so noticeable, you know, people have to pay attention.
Right.
So things have to be formulated that demonstrates, that shows, here's what we're doing, here is how we're doing it, and this is what it produces.
Right, and in some cases,
right.
I was going to say, in some cases, for those who stand in there stuck, this is why we're doing it, because some people don't even understand why. You know, it's like the statement of Harriet Tubman, you know, I had to pull a gun out on some of these people. You know, yeah, because they didn't believe they were what they were.
Right.
Slaves.
Exactly.
You know, and this is the reality.
Exactly. We're going to bring in another caller because this person has been holding on for a while also. I want to make sure I get her in or him in. Caller, you're at 0898. Your mic is open. You have a comment or question for us tonight?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Did we hear you, brother?
I just have to say thank you to both of you, because everything I've heard out of both your mouths has been so on point. It literally almost like brings a tear to my eye, because everything that I see, I'm not a black gentleman myself. I'm a 27-year-old like Latin guy, and I've been just seeing so much reverse racism within the black community when it comes to these events, beatings, brutalizations, just the stuff in the media, that it's frightening, because a certain part of me knows that unfortunately the black community is almost like the lab, like where this oppression starts, like where they experiment to see what happens. Like I feel like your community goes through it first, and then it spreads throughout, and just everything that you guys have been saying, how people need an example. That's exactly correct. And what you're doing is providing that example, but I believe it needs to go a step further. I'm not saying either of you need to do this, but someone, even me, anybody, you know, for all of our individual communities, needs to be on the street where people actually see us and feel us and hear us and see that we're not afraid to go out in the street and talk about all these just terrifying things that are happening to the different communities, especially the black community. And I was just hoping maybe you could address where this negativity for the black community itself is persecuting itself in a way. I was wondering if maybe you could touch on that and why that's so.
Sure. And thank you so much for your comments. And, you probably have heard Doc Strange in terms of the Zulu Nation. I mean, there are many components of the Zulu Nation, as I'm sure you've heard. And so we have what I call allies, at least from my vantage point, the MeWe movement has allies, and those allies are different ethnicities. Particularly the Latino, Latina, the so-called Indian, and you know, even Africans here, we call ourselves indigenous as well. So don't get me wrong, we have allies that we do connect with, but at the same time, I'm very clear on something that I know is real, and that is African people or indigenous people, whichever we care to call it, are the only ones that were kidnapped and brought here massively.
Correct.
Therefore,
absolutely,
I have to address that first and foremost. See, and I don't mix that up with anything. That on that point right there, I have to deal with that as it is. See, and I don't get diverted or do I digress from that reality. Now, that doesn't mean
I don't do
other things and work with other people on other issues. I do all the time. But what I have found, and this addresses your particular comment as well, what has happened because there is such a denial of what has happened. Some of that is programmed, and some of that is psychological. And you know what? Because I'm sure you've all seen some person at some time where they were beaten up so badly, so much, that you just kind of blank it out.
Mm-hmm.
The pain, you try to either kill the pain through drugs, alcohol, or something else, or you just blank it out like it ain't even happening. You see? Mm-hmm. And this is the psychosis that exists. And it exists only in our community. Why? Because we're the only ones for 300, 400 years plus that have had that type of atrocity, you see, no language, forbidden to practice your culture, forbidden to practice your religion, all of that. See?
Forbidden
so,
to learn.
Yes. So there are some factors there that have to be addressed in such a way that it encompasses the totality, or not the totality, many of the aspects of the sociological dynamic that has occurred. And again, we're talking about generations here, you see, generations of oppression, generations of torture, et cetera. So it's a very complex situation, and this is why in applying remedies or applying what we call proposed solutions, it has to be holistic. It has to focus on here's the issue, here's the problem, understanding the cause, because that's something else we try to get away from. We keep putting a Band-Aid or trying to put Band-Aids on stuff. Well, here's the problem. The problem is that we don't do this, or we're doing that. Mm-hmm, that is. But that's not
mm-hmm.
where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
So once we get to really accepting and understanding this is where it came from, deal with that. Put that in your brain. Then we can say, okay, we got it. Now, this is what we're going to do about it.
May I ask
but if
one
we
more
don't
quick
even
question?
Want to accept or deal with how it started and where it came from, then the rest of that stuff is just, you know, Play-Doh.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to
Golden
ask
stuff.
One thing. How
mm-hmm.
How do you retrieve your heritage and your culture when Africa itself is being pillaged constantly? And it's almost like your own nation is not yours anymore. That's just my perspective, maybe, on it. I don't know if you have a different
no.
one.
And,
can
and
I answer that
you.
One, see?
Yes, before you do, let me just see this. I'm going to go
okay.
to you, Doc. But, okay, see, I am, among all these other things, for lack of better terminology, I'm a naturalist. Now, why do I say that? Because there is so much ambiguity about what to call ourselves and which culture we actually came from, da, 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 da. Okay. See, I understand nature. I don't care if it's in Africa. I don't care if it's in the Caribbean. I don't care if it's right here. The sun is the sun. The moon is the moon. The stars are the stars. And the water is the water. And the earth is the earth. So what some of us have done, we've worked
very diligently to work on ourselves so that we could be more in tune to those elements. So to answer your question, how do you know? You strengthen yourself, to, as I say, to become more in tune to what's real. And it'll let you know. I bear witness to it. So when you hear some say, well, you know, I don't eat this anymore, or I don't do that anymore, or whatever, well, for some, that don't mean the daggone thing. But for some, it means a lot. It means they're shedding. They're ridding themselves of certain characteristics that have impeded or infringed upon their capability to understand and overstand those other dynamics. Because as I said, truth pushed to the earth will only rise again. But how do you know that? How do you now, Doc and others, they're artists. What is that about? How do you know? How do you feel what's being said, what's being spoken, what's being played? There's an element there. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying to you that how do we know? We know. That's how we know. Go ahead, Doc.
And, sir, what's your name, sir?
You can call me Wilbraham. That's kind of what I go by.
Say that again.
Wilbraham.
Wilderham?
Yes, Will and then Braham without the A. So Abraham without the A. Wilbraham.
Okay, Wilbraham.
Yeah.
Okay, first and foremost, like what was mentioned again, We do appreciate you taking the time to listen and receive the things that we're saying. And first steps to being able to extract information that's either lost or hidden is by doing some of the things that you're doing right now, taking the time to stop, look, and listen. And not just hear, but listen. And that's what we do. That's what has to be done. I give you an example. If I was born in Rome and raised in a Roman society, I would believe I was Roman until someone told me otherwise, or until one day I happened to look in the mirror and really take notice. I'm here, but I don't look like the people who predominantly live here. So let me find out first by, if I can't see it in the books, I got to go to the people who look like me. I got to go to the people who have told me something that brings me a step closer to my origin. And normally you're going to do that by going to the people who you know in your family look like you and can tell you your story. And that's only going to go but so far. Mm-hmm. So then you have to go a step further, you have to go a step further, you have to go a step further. And always pushing the envelope further to learn more about where you came from. You know, unfortunately, we are the people who some scholars, some historians, some sociologists, some scientists say we are the people with no beginning and no ending. And what that means in some ways is just because we were taken, kidnapped from a place brutally, violently placed.
I'm sorry about that.
It's a continuing process, and I appreciate your empathy. You know, but it goes much deeper than that. And the issue is being able to not just have healed from that, but to continue to build from it. Mm-hmm. You know, because whereas you're stripped of your resources, you're stripped of your identity, you're stripped of your humanity, how do you rise out of that? How do you continue? And we are the living testament of how you continue, how you rise, how you so forth, you know, and it's just by, one, not giving up. You know, as you mentioned, you know, Africa has been colonized 10 times over from everybody from the West to the Eastern European down to Central or South America. And right now it's being colonized by those from the Far East. Okay. So, again, you're talking about one of the biggest, if not the biggest continent in the world, predominantly of a people of color, and we have not been in control of Africa and its resources since the 14th century or the 15th century. And here it is, we're going into the 21st century and so on. So you're basically talking about 700 or more years that we have not been in control of the continent that we originate from. And how does it change? Well, me personally, it's a step-by-step process, because to believe that not only to be able to learn who you are, there'll have to be some kind of transparency from one stage to the next, meaning from the school level to the medical level to the government level, so forth and so on. Because, you know, when I was young in school, there was very few pages about African people. There was very few pages about African-American people. And understanding, when I say African people, I'm referring to the people on the continent. When I say African-American people in this discussion, I'm talking about people in America, the continent, or you know, the region of the United States of America. But yet, it wasn't a popular thing, and it was said in some degrees with shame, to whereas the people didn't want to be recognized as the such. So until you stand up and say, I am going to be recognized as that, that's who I am, and I'm going to find out what my history is, therein lies the issue where all of those truths, all of those stories that were buried, that were burned, that were hidden, that were locked away, if nobody's knocking on the door, if nobody's ringing the bell, then that cycle will perpetuate. But when people like Wilbraham tunes into Empress Geonosis show, she gets to hear Doc Strange, and she gets to hear the sister, I can't remember the sister's name now, who spoke about the birthdays in July. When you get to tune into that show because the bell has been rung, you push the one, we answered the one, and it's 0858 or whatever it was, that's how those chains begin to be broken or continue to be broken. That's how the doors of truth continue to be opened, and it allows us to go much further to understanding not only of ourselves but one another.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
And we thank you.
Now, may I say one final thing? Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Go ahead.
The reason we need to call ourselves men, women, and children is it's immediate. This is something we can do right now, right this minute. Our eyes are open. The handwriting is on the sky. Most people don't even hear the words kids and guys. But once they do, it's phenomenal.
Yes.
And this begins the process. All these things we're talking about are things we have to come together and we have to take time out to do, to focus on. But just calling children children and calling adults men and women is a snap. I'm going through this with my grandson right now, and I'm hearing him, he'll say guy, and then all of a sudden he'll say, I'm a man. That thought needs to be in the head. Then we can, along with all the other things that need to be done, this can be done immediately. Yes. And now we're on the crusade to call children children.
I know for me, I do that anyway, and oftentimes go to different meetings and also suggest the same thing to others. So, you know, I think some of us are already doing that, but
yes,
there are so many other things that we can also do, and we're not at all. I went to a meeting last week, and a sister, very nice sister, you know, kept saying kids, 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 and I, you know, said to her, I said, that's not something that I would call any of my children.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though I said that to her and have said it to others on, you know, several occasions, they still continue to do it. So my point being that when we have our own societies or our own villages, and that's the code of conduct, then that's how we are interacting. You see, at some point, we have, at least for me, I have to create something that's going to be consistent, and everyone that's involved is agreeing to do that.
True.
That
very
has
true
to be established. Because, see, other than that, you know, it's like, how do you manage that in order
right
to achieve an overall goal?
Right.
You see, it's something that we're going to do at any rate, but I'm saying to do it in a way that is going to be effective.
Most effective, right.
So what I'm attempting to formulate in bringing about the new AFCOM village, the new Ma'ati Nation, et cetera, is there will be codes of conduct that is provided. And those that want to be a part of that are welcome to do so. You see? But I find people become resentful because what happened when I said to this sister last week, I'm going to ask her to call in next week too, and she'll tell you for herself. Her position was, it doesn't matter what we call them, as long as we love them. No, but I'm just telling you, see, I don't have time for all that. And what I mean by that is, when I say these things to people, then they want to get into all this other dialogue about, well, you know, we didn't, see, I don't have time for that.
Right.
I really don't. I really
right
don't. And
right.
But
we're
I answer that with
semantics
her. Right, I'm not going to argue with you. You know, I'm not going to allow you to draw me into a whole bunch of dialogue about, you know, I engaged in it for that time because I had the time to do it at that particular meeting. And she went on into, I've been doing child care for 12 years, and I can tell you that, you know, the women, they come and they drop the children off, and da 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 da. She went, you know, started talking about all the stuff she has to go through, and you know, and she explained, she said, and I love them, and I do this, and I give them that. She says, so it doesn't matter what I call them as long as I'm loving them and caring for them and showing them. And so she went on and on.
And unfortunately, that's why we need to do it, that mentality right there.
This is what I do. Okay.
This is what I do.
But Steve, wait. We've got to get ready to close the segment out. Here's the point. For people that have to do that, they should.
Thank you.
But for me, I will continue, because I don't use that word personally. I don't use that word. But I'm saying if I'm going to be around other people and correct them, then that puts me in a situation where I have to then take the time to explain to them and talk to them, and I don't have that kind of time. So that's why I have to create something that could educate a whole lot of people at one time as opposed to on an individual basis. It takes them too much time to do that, at least for me. When
especially
I'm trying to do 50,000 other things.
If I can add, especially when you realize that the child who you're addressing is older than you.
Well, yeah, that's another problem.
Because that in itself is the dynamic.
Right.
With a lot
yeah,
of
that,
things that, we, that, we, that,
yeah.
that we're dealing with now, where we're dealing with people who, when it comes to some of these subject matters that we've been talking about and discussing tonight, as well as we've discussed for some time at different stages, where those people who should be side by side in doing things at least have a dialogue, like you said, that's consistent with what we're talking about and not in opposition, not in debate, but we're all on the same page here.
Mm-hmm.
You start to realize that these are the people who are more immature than the actual adolescent and preteens, who very much in their own ways can be called children themselves because their lack of understanding or their lack of appreciation for what's taking place.
And that's
how do you have the dialogue with them to bring them up to snuff, let alone to bring the child up to snuff themselves?
And all the more reason why we must do that. And I'm not saying go up to people individually. If you can possibly do that, fine. But always be the example with those correct words that identify us as human beings. Because our children aren't being called what they are.
Yes.
That's why they're kids. And then when they go to the school and to the malls and shoot everything up, we stand back and wonder, well, why they do that? They did that because they're not human anymore. They were never human. They've been called, before they're even born, they're bumps. The baby bump. And then when they finally are born, they're crumb snatchers. Then they become the terrible twos.
Yeah,
and then they're kids.
And
then they're guys. Mm. And then they can't become a man because they've never heard the word.
True.
Well, my position would be, and I support it and encourage it, but I have to put time and energy into things that's going to produce some things that really need to happen. Again, in my personal life, I already, there's certain words I don't use. And oftentimes when I do training, I train other sisters in African womanhood. And one of the training sessions that I conduct is, words, certain words that we do not use. And, and kit is one of them. But I present it in the context of from the spiritual realm. I like to go to where people can relate. In reality, and most folks spiritually, if you say certain things to them about certain contexts, you can connect with them. So when I teach or train a session and talk about not using the word kid, I ask them, do you know what a kid is?
Mm-hmm.
And the question usually is no. And then some might say it's a baby goat. And then I'll say, that's correct. It's a baby. Now, in spiritual worlds, and I'm saying generally speaking, especially in the more recognized spiritual realms of thought, of teachings, what does a goat represent? And most people who have done any kind of biblical or Quranic or whatever, or just sitting down listening to somebody, have heard that the goat represents the devil.
Exactly.
Yes.
But see, when you connect those dots and you say the things, that are relevant to each person, no matter where they're at in their
mm-hmm.
train of thought. There are certain things that they relate to regardless. So when I
yes.
say to them, if you're using the word kid to a child, you're merely calling them a little demon.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They relate
right.
to that. But
wow.
see, again, there has to be a discourse, a conversation, in order for people to literally grasp what it is that's being said to them. In reality, you see,
exactly.
so 9 times out of 10, when I tell someone, I say that to someone, they look at me as if, oh my gosh, they get it. They understand it from that context. See, this is why I'm saying that when we do things, we have to think about how much of the impact, when whatever effort you put into it, the impact, and these are things that have to be structured in order to really make a difference in a period in time. And that's why I call this time period the Ma'atik Epoch.
Mm.
I call this time period that we're in the Ma'atik Epoch. Why? Because a people that's using wisdom or using some form of goal methodology,
right.
they're going to designate a time period, be it the time of the Renaissance, the Byzantine, the this or the that. Groups of people will designate a time period in order to substantiate whatever they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that. We don't
True.
Do that. You understand? See, this takes, you have to study and really connect those dots.
Right.
You
and
have
that's
to do
part
that.
Of why we don't do it. Because of the
right.
simple fact that as a people collectively, we don't indulge further into studying the things that matter.
And it's because too many things are distracting us, just trying to survive. And I hate to use that as an example all the time, but it's the truth. And,
right,
and Empress, thank you for your brilliance and your wisdom. I truly appreciate you. And thanks for that piece on the goat representing the devil, because
right.
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, but it's,
right.
it's very real. It's very
yes,
real.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Wow.
See, it sends
yes.
an image. See, this is why
mm-hmm.
when you use dialogue, I forget who was it that said you learn to speak through English.
Yes.
See, as we develop in what it is we understand and know to do, we have to create mechanisms and ways to do this that's out the box. See?
Yes.
So essentially, as we're saying this language and talking it, as you develop and grow, you learn to speak through it.
Mm.
Oh, see, that's what Mumia would do. That's one of the reasons why Mumia is such a prolific, brilliant writer and speaker, because he understood the art and the ability to go beyond the words. And he
yes.
practiced it, and that's the way he was able to articulate and administer the thoughts. And that's why he was so dangerous.
Yes,
he
yes.
learned how to maneuver through the maze. So that when you heard him speak, you heard him speak.
Right.
See? And that's very difficult for most. But he trained himself to do that. So I'm saying when we want to get things done, we want to be heard, we have to begin to understand how to go through that paradigm in order to make certain that we hit the spot.
Yes.
Because that's what they're doing. They're using all kinds of signs and stuff.
Yes, indeed.
To program and maneuver in our brains and all of that.
and that's been their way for centuries.
That's right.
And that's why
right.
they stolen everything and have everything.
Yes.
That's right.
Devil
we know that.
Yes,
we know
exactly.
that. So what is our response?
Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of people who don't know it. And if they do know it, then it's not able or just don't know how important it is to do something about it.
And that was going to be
well,
my response.
Yes.
When,
right.
when you say, we know it, the first thing is you have to identify the numbers, you know, and say, okay, how many of us actually know it and care to the groups that, like you said, the percentage of the people that don't know, the percentage of the people that know don't care, or the percentage of people that know it and want a piece of it. Because
mm-hmm.
let's not forget, there's a large portion of us as a people who love the white man to death. For the simple fact that he gives us or gives them nothing. And that's why they love him so much. Because they're constantly waiting for that one day that they're going to receive something. And it's never going to happen. So they'll never leave the form of trying to please, do everything possible, change your hair, go to the BET Awards, wear all the wrong clothing, eat all the wrong foods, vote for all the wrong people, whatever the case may be. Whatever that is said to do, they're going to do it. The things that said don't do, they're not going to do them. Because for whatever reason, they're trying to fit into that square peg, but their body is circular. So you'll never fit into there geometrically. It's just not, it's not a reality, but for them and their warped, institutionalized, programmed mentality, these are the people who know and don't believe, or hear. There's a statement in Arabic that said, the statement in Arabic is "Sami'na wa ta'na," which means "I hear and I obey." But in their case, it's "I hear and I disobey." And this is the reality
of
some of
us. And I totally agree. I totally agree. The only thing I would add to that, family, is this. At some point, it has to be those of us who are. And with that said, when you put that energy together, when you put, you know, those minds together, see, we already know that for the most part, you know, this is not going to happen. I mean, it's not happening. But see, you know, George Washington Carver and others, we all benefit from what they did.
Yes.
Themselves. You see, I'm not afraid for people or a person to do something. You see, in fact, I encourage it. If one of our people has a certain capability that's going to advance us, listen, I'm going to support you in every way I can.
Right.
I don't have to be all up in it. So my point being, I'm not talking necessarily or focusing necessarily when it comes to getting things done. I'm not focusing on those that can't, don't, or won't. I understand that already. I'm saying the ones that do have the ability, can have the ability, et cetera, et cetera. I'm talking about them folk. Let's make the effort. See, I'm real clear that Dot may have the talent or the capability of being a doctor. Sister Coker may have the capability of being the lyricist. Yeah. So I don't necessarily have to expect each person to have to do everything, or you understand what I'm saying? Each person has a specific gift, talent, capability.
Right.
So I'm saying once that's put together more realistically and effectively, then we have something that we can work with and utilize and put into motion.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I'm speaking to the ones that have that concept, that idea, that viewpoint, or whatever you want to call it, that motivation, that. Rather than to keep focusing on all of, well, they ain't trying to do that. Fine, okay, fine. Well, we got that. What they got to do with the ones that do, that have
right.
the capability to move this thing forward. See, and that's what I'm saying. And those are the challenges that I'm presenting, and I'm calling people out on it, because it's one thing or the other. This is what I learned from my elders. Either get up or get out the way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
One or the other. One
that's
or the
reality.
Other.
Reality.
That's right. There it is. All the other stuff, mm-mm. No. Our people need us. Whether they realize it, whether
sure
they
indeed.
Want it or not, it's too bad.
Yes.
We're here.
No, it's
so
too good.
We either go, right.
It
no,
is
I mean,
too good.
Absolutely. But I
it's
tell
okay.
you what I've been taught, and I've been taught this, you either use it or lose it.
Lose it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One or the other.
And we're witnessing it.
That's right.
As we
every
speak.
Day.
Yep.
That's
mm-hmm.
it. Okay.
This is reality.
So that's it, family. We are moving forward. I thank both of you and all of you who are been tuning in. We've done an extra session tonight, an extra hour almost.
Is it over already? Don't say it's the
end. Praising
it's
the creator for all
good.
This brilliance, for brilliance, the both of you, just brilliant. I mean,
thank
I wish
you.
I could talk the way y'all talk. I wish it
well,
was coming out of me
you,
the way
sister.
It comes out of you. It's amazing, amazing.
We thank you. Well, you
thank
inspire
you
and encourage.
Yes.
And we
yes,
thank
you.
You, you know,
so,
it's all
I mean, because
connected.
If I'm not mistaken, you kicked off this whole thing so
yes.
tonight, and I was in awe and in shock. So my hat is off to you. I'm humbled, and I'm just thankful, very thankful to be able to be in a set situation with great minds like yourselves. So
well,
I truly am blessed.
Well, thank you. Somebody bring me back down to earth. I'm flying right now. Thank you so much.
You're
it
welcome.
Has just been a delight and such an educational experience. And I'm
yes.
just still going to say it. We have to call those children what they are.
Yes.
Children.
Absolutely.
That
absolutely.
Is key.
And we shall. And we shall.
And that's one of the things that I'm key on, and I'm just doing it. And every time I have the opportunity, it's coming out my face.
All
and that's
right.
important. That's
so thank
all right,
you
family.
So much.
Well, we're going to close this session out. And again, we thank all of you for tuning in. And as you can tell, the focus of black music is continuing on beyond June. And that is our intention. And we will have more dialogue as we formulate some strategies and structures to move this thing forward. We're going to close out with none other than Mr. Miles Davis.
Oh, well.
Awesome.
If you haven't
awesome.
Heard of him, you better start.
Awesome.
Scott Shane, thank you so much, my brother.
Thank you again,
we're going to be talking
my
soon.
Sister. Yes, indeed, on the next episode. And anyone out there still listening, peace. And have a great rest of the weekend, and we catch up very soon.
Absolutely, and thank you all so much, Sister Coker.
Thank you. Thank
and
you both.
You all. We thank you.
Thank you.
Praise
yes.
the Creator. Praise the Creator. Have
yes,
a good
ma'am.
Night.
Likewise. Peace.
So long.